The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm James Heal and I'm joined today by Katie Balls and Fraser Nelson. Now this morning the Prime Minister has done a press conference in Number 10 talking about the Rwanda Bill which returns to the Commons. It could finally become law tonight. Katie, talk us through the whole issue of Rwanda.
Yes, so in terms of the ping pong game that has been played with this bill, we're now at, you know, a new level in terms of Lord's resistance. And the hope in government and the Whip's office was that it would have got through the Lords last week. They added more amendments, and therefore another showdown comes today. Now, MPs are hoping to really be off the hook after today and they can go and campaign for the local elections. But I think it would be helpful to them if they could say this is now on the road to royal assent. Rishi Sunak used this press conference today to effectively say, you know, lay off on the opposition and we are going to, you know, we are going to pass this bill. And if that takes staying up to the wee small hours, then so be it, because nothing's going to get in our way and flights to Rwanda are going to happen. He also talked about the timing around flights to Rwanda, saying once it becomes royal assent, saying there's no way it wouldn't. And once it did, then you potentially have 10 to 12 weeks to make it operational. So I think we now move, even those who define spring loosely, I think we now have to admit it's not happening in anything we might call spring. Now, I think they're saying 10 to 12 weeks. There are some in government who hope actually it could be like 4 to 6 if things go well. But there's clearly a sense of if you keep making promises you can't keep, you'd rather have low expectations than high expectations. He was pressed on, you know, what would success look like? And he said, you know, stopping the boats. So when you think about that pledge to just completely stop the boats, I think some now do think that was misjudged, but he's not rowing back from that. And then I think in terms of the operational aspects, I think you really got the sense the Prime Minister is trying to say he has a plan, okay? And you know, saying there's airfields ready to go, there's space, there's you know, flight plans ready to go, and therefore they just need these things to happen. So what was the point of this press conference? I mean, I think in terms of a charm offensive to crossbench peers or Labour's who want to block this, it will have done nothing to help the Prime Minister. It will have done quite the opposite, in the sense, I don't think the Prime Minister saying his plan must work to those who don't like the plan is going to make a blind bit of difference. But I think therefore the point is about Rishi Sunak trying to signal both to voters and to his party that he is very strong on an area that lots in his party feel very strongly about. And I think ahead of the local elections, which are of course May the 2nd, trying to effectively say, yes, you know, when everyone starts to shake a bit from the turmoil, potentially really bad results, why scrap the plan? Because there is, you know, a schedule, something's going to happen this way. Whereas perhaps to throw the Tory party into another spell of psychodrama and potentially a leadership challenge, is that really going to keep going? So I think there's a little bit of almost trying to set the narrative, both in terms of the vote tonight, but I think more what happens after.
It's quite something that he's basically said 10 to 12 weeks. So that gives us, by my calculations, the 15th of July as being the date by which there will be flights taking off to Rwanda. Now, this is almost double or quits for Rishi Sunak, because he made the pledge in the first place. He said stop the boats as one of his five pledges. Now, even if his scheme works, will it necessarily have the effect on small boat arrivals that he suspects? But remember, this is a guy who is still in his head planning for a November election. He is desperate that by that date we will see some progress on Rwanda. He thinks that could be a game changer for him. He also thinks we'll see progress on immigration levels going down a lot, on the NHS waiting lists also coming down. A whole bunch of metrics that are going the wrong way right now will, he thinks, be going the right way over summer, and that might filter through to public consciousness in an October or a November election. Now, the longer you get to go along this road, the higher the gamble, really. Because it isn't the case that if a Lord's passed it, then that means flights will definitely take off. I understand that he's managed to get the logistics sorted out. There's an RAF airfield, there's even a charter aircraft which has been chartered to do it. So all of that he will have sorted. But of course, this will depend on whether there's another legal challenge in the courts and what those courts decide. Now, he has decided not to give the legislation for full legal protection that Robert Jenrick wanted. Jenrick is former immigration minister, and he pretty much resigned, saying that Sunak's bill, the one currently going through the Commons, won't work because it doesn't give proper defence against somebody claiming that the ECHR is incompatible with deporting migrants. And I am more sympathetic to the courts here because it's not just ECHR, it's the UN Refugee Convention and other treaties that are being used as examples of why Sunak's scheme isn't compatible with the other laws that Parliament has passed. So if Parliament doesn't manage to clear up the legal mess, it can expect the scheme to get stuck yet again in this mess. So in declaring today that it won't, but this time he's serious, but this time it will work, Sunak has asked voters perhaps for a final time to trust him on Rwanda and given them a relatively short timetable to prove that he can do it.
Yeah, you talk about trusting the voters there, Katie. One of the questions which Sunak got asked was, will there be a summer election or not? I mean, you've written about this today. Tell us what the thinking in government is on this issue.
Yeah, I think the point is there's no unity in terms of the thinking. So there's different strains of thought. So therefore, you cannot be annoyed at us if we tell you the wrong thing. but of course, what Rishi Sunak said is he repeated what he previously said, which is he thinks it's most likely an election takes place in the second half of the year. Now, of course, if you have a July election that is in the second half of the year, perhaps you could even go for a late June one and say, you know, it's in the counting. But you know, so I think there is... You know, he's left enough space to not have an autumn election. In terms of where I think the Prime Minister will go, I think that autumn has always been the default. It's where they think the economy improving, you know, also more time being Prime Minister and the place to get to. I still think there is a chance of a pre-summer election. I think that, you know, there are some people making that case. The arguments, if you're arguing for pre-summer holidays effectively rather than autumn, is the Tory party. Do you think the Tory party is going to stay united all the way to October or November? Is it better to call it quits? There's also small boats. Now, yes, the Rwanda plan, but over the summer, you're going to have much better weather, probably. And that might mean a higher number of crossings. So lots of headlines are not going to want to get. Also, the operational problems of the Rwanda plan that you're going to have to, you know, balance with that. And then I think polling, where the Tory party is now and where the Prime Minister is on personal ratings, is not a good place at all. If you decide, as some of the graphs show, that's a downward trajectory, is waiting a few more months going to be a good thing or a bad thing? Is there a base level of how low it can go? And do you think another factor, but I think it's a bit more complicated, is does waiting until the autumn allow reform to gather more momentum? I think the counter to that is what Tory strategists are terrified of is a Nigel Farage return. And in a way, a summer election could allow Nigel Farage to make a brief foray back while also clearing his schedule, obviously depending how he does, for the autumn US election publicity tour, which could be quite lucrative for him in terms of Donald Trump, his friend. So that was one. But therefore, those are some of the factors. And also, I think, you know, when does Rishi Sunak feel as though he's going to have the most energy to give in quite an intensive campaign? And it means that I think that you are hearing more that they want to at least keep the option alive of going before the summer. I think the counter to that is, I think, as much as, you know, we, some MPs and others can say is why it's smart to go sooner, potentially the right time to do that would have been May, because you're doing it before the turmoil we're probably going to get after the local elections, if you just make it into one thing. And we can all say it's smart for X reasons. And I'm sure lots of columnists, if he does wait till autumn, will just write, he made a mistake, he should have gone sooner. But to actually stand up at a lectern after quite difficult local election results, say a few weeks later, and call an election is a tricky thing to do and say it's the right one, because I think the bulk of the parliamentary party want autumn, not sooner.
Fraser, is that your assessment?
Well, Andrew Neil has got this phrase that when you're on the skids, you keep on skidding. And I think this is what's happening to him right now. Now, he might be thinking to himself, OK, look at these metrics that could turn my way by November. All of that could be true. But then again, it seems that barely a week has passed now without another Tory you've never heard of being busted for some unspeakable abomination. And it just seems that there's a pattern coming here, that he might end up with terrible local election results, a leadership challenge, which he might win, but still in a weakened way. So you can see ways in which it just does keep getting worse. If you also look in the Spectator Data Hub, we do track prime ministerial popularity, and that shows it is always, always a zigzag down. It's a one-way thing. You don't get sudden revivals of this. And Rishi Sunak has got an approval rating to rival the worst that any recent political leader has ever seen. It's difficult to see that being reversed, even if Rwanda does work. So, of course, this is a council of despair and defeat. The ones who want it an election now think we are going to lose, but we'd rather lose and have maybe 200 MPs than lose and have something between 50 and 100. So this is the debate right now. I don't think Rishi Sunak could seriously look his party in the eye and say, OK, we're going to fight and there's a good chance that we can win. The best he could say is, look, things are so bad, but if we go now, we might stem the bleeding and we might end up with a semblance of a strong opposition, whereby if we wait until November, we could face closer to annihilation. And when I speak to ministers in the government, those are the only options that they talk to me about. Defeat or annihilation, recoverable or unrecoverable. Now, that isn't something that any prime minister wants to accept. You have got this kind of innate, hardwired belief that vindication lies just around the corner. Every politician, every political leader needs to believe that. So if Sunak does have a summer election, it will be because he has stopped believing that and he is trying to crash land the plane on the Hudson rather than go for a worse option.
What a nice analogy. Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening to Coffee Hour Shots. And if you enjoyed this podcast, why not subscribe and give us a good rating and review?